This is the Fitness Reborn podcast. My name is Sean, your very glorious, intelligent, brilliant, gorgeous host. So, and you, my beautiful audience, you're back with here with me again. And this morning we have Michelle Stamm. Michelle is a physical therapist of 30 years, and she is currently the owner of Wellness Empowered Plant-Based Health Coaching located in the heartland of America, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Talking to another Midwesterner here, always exciting, got a lot of things to talk about. And I know from my own experience here that being plant-based and living in the Midwest, where everything is meat and dairy and stuff like that, I know that is no easy way to live. But Michelle, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Sean. I'm super excited to talk with you. And just, you're right, I live in Milwaukee. I don't think people think of plant-based eating when they think of Milwaukee. They think of beer, brats, and cheese. So
yeah,
I think we have lots to talk about too.
and Milwaukee, I know because I've been to Milwaukee. Milwaukee is not some little podunk town either. It's a very modern urban area to live in too. But you're right. Yeah, they're microbreweries and they're brats. And, you know, all the German-inspired foods because of all the German and Hungarian immigrants that moved up there way, way back in the day. Yeah, that is big in their culture.
Yes, it
so
is.
I guess you coming at them saying, hey, live plant-based. They're like, say what now?
Yeah. The good news is, you know, beer is plant-based. I don't know that I'll argue for it as a health food, but it's plant-based.
Right.
But yeah. Brats and cheese are not. So yeah, that's been the uphill battle I fought, but you're right. It is a great, there's more and more and more. There's some vegan restaurants for sure in the Milwaukee area, but also there's more and more restaurants that have at least a vegan option, which tends to be the best option for me when I'm going out with friends, because, you know, I haven't converted everyone in my life to be a vegan plant-based eater. So, you know, a work in progress.
you're going to keep nibbling at them.
That's
over and
right.
over again until they finally see the light, right?
Yeah. Well, and not in a naggy way. In
well,
fact, what I have found, though, you know, I've talked about the carrot versus the stick. I can nag people and tell them all the terrible things that might happen to their health or whatever. But I think really the best way that I've found is to sort of invite people into plant-based eating with delicious food. So if we can, you know, restaurants know how to make food taste good. So if we're at a restaurant together and I order a beautiful, delicious plant-based meal and, you know, offer them a taste or get a plant-based appetizer and we all share it, I feel like that's the best way to sort of encourage people into the plant-based world with me.
the restaurant world in the vegan too. I mean, when like I told you earlier, I was a vegan for many years. And I remember I posted a meme on Facebook just as a joke, but it was funny because it was true. It was like, I posted this meme on Facebook. It was a picture of Martin Lawrence, the actor Martin Lawrence, you know, making some like really disgruntled face, like that. And the text was, when you're in a restaurant and they tell you the vegan option is a salad.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much as far as a lot of them go.
Yep. No, you're not wrong. And then, and then people think that's enough. But, you know, you can order like the avocado to make that salad more filling and stuff. But I don't know. I'm obviously opinionated about this, but there are some easy things you can do to have at least one or two vegan options on most menus. So have you even heard of a coach who, she's not really a coach, she's in the plant-based world. And that's what she does, is she's a consultant with restaurants to help them kind of use the ingredients on their menus to create plant-based options. So that's nothing I get do, you know, in my work, but I think that sounds like a really cool job. So
it could be. Well, I mean, just going back to you here. So like I said, when I introduced you, you were, or at least, or are maybe still a physical therapist for 30 years. And from what I've read, that was your inroad into what you currently do at this point with health, with plant-based health coaching. So let's start there. What did you see as a physical therapist all those years that drove you in this direction?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I know when most people think of a physical therapist, they think of the person that helped them with their sprained ankle or their shoulder surgery or something like that. And I did do some of that kind of work in my career, but mostly what I did as a physical therapist was work in rehab settings, in long-term care settings with people who had bigger things happen to them, bigger than a sprained ankle or a shoulder surgery. They had, you know, they had had a stroke, or maybe they had an amputation from diabetes, lost a limb to that disease, or had a heart attack, or, you know, bigger things like that. And so a lot of what we did in physical therapy was really, really hard work for them. It was helping them learn how to get out of bed again, use the bathroom again, climb stairs, walk up and down the hallway, all of those things really with the goal of hopefully being able to go home again and hopefully doing so as independently as possible. I mean, independence was the goal for everybody, but, you know, depending on what had happened to them, that was or wasn't possible. But anyway, knowing what I do about health, I knew that a lot of those diseases come from lifestyle. So at the same time I'm working in these settings for, you know, more than 15 years now, I've been learning about the benefits of a plant-based diet. I've, you know, first was just, you know, hearing about it through just some books I read on my own and stuff. And then later I got schooling about it and things, because I was just blown away with the amazing benefits of it. And really, that's what prompted me to start my own business. Because my thought is, if I could meet those people that were in the nursing homes or the rehab settings, if I could just meet them like 10 years earlier or 5 years earlier, like maybe they wouldn't have to be there. Maybe we could prevent the stroke or reverse their diabetes so they didn't lose a limb or prevent the heart attack. All those things that were putting them there, what if I could meet them beforehand? And what really fueled the fire for me is I would be working with them. Like I said, it's obviously really hard work to learn to walk again after you have a stroke, right? So they're working so hard in physical therapy. And then I would take them back to their room where their lunch tray is waiting for them. And you can imagine, you know, scrambled eggs or meatloaf or, you know, all kinds of things that I was learning probably contributed to the stroke they had. And then, of course, like we said, I live in Wisconsin. So there was always that little carton of milk sitting next to their lunch. And I just looked at that lunch tray and I thought, oh my gosh, you just spent, you know, an hour with me in physical therapy trying to overcome this stroke that you're having. And I felt like the facilities I was working for was here, they're like serving you your second stroke on a plate. And it was so out of alignment for me that I stopped doing that and started my own coaching business where, like I said, I try and help people ease into a plant-based diet so they can hopefully lower their cholesterol, reverse their diabetes, all those things, so they don't end up in that situation.
So you don't currently work as a physical therapist? You just still certify as one?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. I love being a physical therapist, so I'm not ready to let that part of me go. I don't actually put my hands on people and do physical therapy, but I still keep up my certification because I want to be able to, you know, talk to people, you know, of course, in coaching, people have questions, not just about food, but also about exercise and stuff. So I guess I feel more qualified, at least. I mean, I feel like I know what I need to give them the advice anyway. But yes, if I keep up with my certification, I think everybody, it looks a little better, I guess. So plus, it's just an important part of who I am. I love being a PT. So
the people that come to you, do they come to you for rehabilitative issues? Or is it more preventative?
Both. I work with people kind of all across the spectrum. I've worked with people young, like as young as teenagers. I've worked with people as old as in their 80s and kind of everybody in between. I would say a lot of the people that I work with, I don't know that I've worked with anybody who's had a stroke. I'm working with a couple people right now who have diabetes who are working towards hopefully reversing their diabetes with a plant-based diet. I've worked with a couple people with pre-diabetes who have then, you know, most people go with from pre-diabetes to diabetes, and these people have gone from pre-diabetes back to normal A1C. People with high cholesterol have lowered their cholesterol back into a good range. So that kind of thing. So a lot of preventative, but I suppose all different people. I don't know if that answers the exact question you were asking, but.
No, it really does. I was just kind of getting a feel. So, I mean, because when you work in PT, obviously it's more rehabilitative. It's probably entirely rehabilitative because you're working with people in the hospital who have already had the devastating incident, whatever it might be, happen to them. So now this is the recovery point here. So I wonder, as a physical therapist, like what really was the rate of recovery for a lot of these people that you worked with after strokes or after injuries or amputations or anything like that, or diabetes related amputations, things of that nature. I don't know if you know, but how successful was their recovery rate?
That is, yeah, there's as many answers to that question as there are people that I worked with. There's it just there's so many factors. It depends on, like, if you have a stroke. That would that in strokes, people who had strokes was probably the those were my very first patients that I worked with 30 plus years ago when I was a baby PT, and still I did that through my entire career. But you can have a stroke that's a little teeny tiny stroke, or you can have a massive stroke. You can have a stroke that happens in one part of your brain versus the other. And then some people just come at it with in better health, and you know, maybe they had the stroke, but everything else about their health is pretty good, where some people come and they're already in terrible health. So the more positive factors and the smaller stroke you have, the better your recovery rate is going to be versus somebody who comes at it with a lot of comorbidities and had a massive brainstem stroke or something like that. So I'm not trying to avoid your question. It's just there's not like a straight answer, I guess.
Well, sure. Well, let's go to some of the more severe cases here where, people who really need a lot of help to get back to being just generally functional and independent. So we're talking about maybe your more severe cases here where, you saw that they had the stroke and they have the comorbidities, and then they're in the hospital recovery setting here. You're working with them, and like you said, you work with them, and then they go back to whatever it is their daily life is in the hospital, which includes their nutrition, which is not always the, as you were noticing, was not always the best thing that they could be getting served. So if we're dealing with someone like that, like how likely would they be to going back to being at least semi independent?
Again, it really depends on where in their brain the stroke was and stuff. So a lot of people might be able to, you know, even if they have some physical impairments. I mean, we know people who, you know, have a spinal cord injury who don't have any function of the lower half of their body, but they can still live an independent life. Because their upper body's intact, because their cognition is intact. I think that maybe a lot of times a stroke can affect your cognition, which then, if you're not thinking clearly, not making good choices, not, you know what I mean? Like, just can't make safe choices and stuff that can keep people from living independently again, even if they might have full physical return of their body. So the it's just, yeah, I'd hate to like avoid your question because there's just so many answers. But if somebody maybe had a physical stroke that was very impairing of one side of their body, that's typically what you see. And the other side was intact and their cognition was intact, and you know, they could, you know, learn to live independently either from a wheelchair, or a lot of times they would get muscle motor return in their leg and be able to learn to walk again with maybe a cane or something. So it's kind of like, you know, you learn over the years of doing this. If you meet somebody and you sort of see this certain presentation, you might think, at least in your mind, you start learning as somebody with experience with working with people, like, oh, I can see them going this direction, or maybe they'll be able to be independent, or maybe they won't. And then you work towards it. And then the other thing is, even sometimes people go home from the hospital or the nursing home or the rehab setting, and they might be at one level, but honestly, your brain continues to heal for years, you know. So people that maybe I discharged from, not I, but we discharged from a hospital setting, you know, a year or two later, they might come in and visit us, and, you know, they're doing much, much better. So it's a slow recovery. The best recovery happens immediately, but then it also happens over a long period of time. So I don't know if that's okay, go ahead.
I mean, I know that was a big question to throw at you. So no, I don't feel like you're being evasive. I think you're just trying to answer it the best you can. I know there's a lot of gradation and nuance and a lot of different, you know, individual scenarios you have to work with here. So maybe my question was just a little too big to really get a concrete answer here. I know in healthcare there's rarely any black and white real answers to much of anything. So in your wellness coaching program, like, how do you work with people? Let's say you have someone who comes to you and, you know, let's say they have a history of strokes in their family background and high blood pressure, cholesterol, you know, all that good stuff here. And they're trying to do what they can to get ahead of it before it becomes an issue. So how would you work with them?
That is the perfect client for me. So I really start with, first of all, I see all my clients on Zoom. So, and I see them right here, you know, as you and I talk, I'm sitting here in my kitchen, which is right where I see all of my clients, which works out really great because if we're talking and they're like, but I never heard of that ingredient, I'm just like, wait there. And I run to my fridge and I grab it and then I show it to them on our little Zoom call or if there's a cookbook I want to recommend or anything. So I found that it works really well to see people from my kitchen. And then if they're in their kitchen, we even sometimes cook together and that kind of thing. So my first goal as a coach is really to get people comfortable with eating plant-based. So a lot of, I mean, some people jump right in, some people it's a gradual transition for them, but I look at, especially that first month of us working together of let's find plant-based foods that you like, because if we find foods that you like, you're actually going to eat them. And then that is how, I mean, I believe the magic is in the plant-based food. And once you're eating that plant-based food, then they start seeing the health benefits in their body. But without being comfortable eating plant-based, of course, that's not going to happen. So a lot of that first weeks of coaching with people, it's finding new recipes for them or teaching them about ingredients, that kind of thing. Or even a lot of what I do is trying to find ways, like if they're used to eating oatmeal for breakfast every day, great. Let's just put almond milk on there instead of dairy milk or something. Or let's, if you like taking a sandwich to work for lunch, you know, let's, okay, you don't have, if you, maybe you had a ham and cheese sandwich, let's talk about like a hummus and veggie sandwich or even peanut butter and jelly. So trying to make it as comfortable as a transition for people as we can. So we're not, I'm not upending their whole life. I feel like I'm changing enough by, if you're eating a plant-based diet, you're not eating any meat, eggs, or dairy. So if you're removing all of that, I get that that can be a big hurdle for some people. So I want to make the transition as comfortable as I can in other ways.
What's some of the barriers you've run up against? I mean, you just kind of told us a little bit, but what's some of the more common barriers you see kind of again and again and again?
Yeah, I think really the first barrier I see for a lot of people is just belief, I guess, believing in themselves, first of all, that they can do it or that this could possibly work for them, that kind of thing. And for those kind of people, I just ask them to suspend their disbelief, which I know that sounds like a big complicated term. It's a literary term that maybe some people learned in English class, but suspend your disbelief just literally means take your disbelief, put it on a shelf and just try believing or try kind of believing. I always talk about it. It's like if you read any books when you were a little kid where the animals talked, like Charlotte's Web, for example. Right. You can't read Charlotte's Web if you sit there reading Charlotte's Web thinking animals can't talk. This is a dumb book. Animals don't talk. You have to suspend your disbelief about animals being able to talk. You just have to put that on a shelf to enjoy that book. Right. And it's the same kind of thing with getting started with a plant-based diet. Just suspend your disbelief. Even if you're like, I don't know if this is going to give it a try. If you can just switch and think, well, maybe this will work. Maybe I'll like the food and then get started. So
well, that's why you read it when you're a kid and you're not so cynical and jaded. It's like, a pig doesn't actually talk. You know, but you know, you kind of default to that when you become an adult here. You watch these kids movies, you know, especially now all these kids movies, especially like Madagascar or something like that. You see all these animals in Africa. They're like talking to each other, interacting with each other, and they're friends with each other and stuff like that. And you're like, you do have to suspend your disbelief. And it's like, you know, in reality, these animals would be killing and eating each other. They're not buddies.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's that same kind of thing. And then people, But that's a great, I mean, thanks for jumping on the analogy there, but that's literally what I think some people have to do is just put that aside and just give it a try. And then once people give it a try and they start experiencing the health benefits in their body and they start actually liking the food and thinking, oh, maybe this isn't so bad, then they start making the progress. And that's why when you asked before what my sessions are like, every single session I start with people's wins. What's going well? Because of course hurdles are going to come up and we can keep talking about those. But I, rather than focusing on the negative, I want to start everybody at the beginning of their session. Let's talk about the positive. And the positive can be like, oh yeah, I lost 2 pounds, or oh, my knees don't hurt as much as they used to, that kind of thing. But it can also be like, wow, I found a vegan restaurant I like, or wow, my kids actually ate dinner that I made that was, you know, a bean soup last night and they actually ate it. So the wins can be anything, but it's so much more helpful to start with the wins and that positivity. And I know you know this in your work as a trainer too. Like you can't be negative all the time or you won't get anywhere. So
So when you started out with this for yourself here, so when you started going plant-based yourself here, was this a lot of the same kind of thing that you had to deal with? Or were you one of these people that are just like, you were gung-ho from the very beginning, didn't have any problems, never felt any cravings for any cheese or something like that? No?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I wish it was that easy of a transition for me, but probably I don't, because then I would not be a very good coach, right? I'd just be like, oh yeah, suck it up. You can do this. No, every one of the hurdles that I ever experience with my clients, I've already been through them. So, when I first started hearing about plant-based eating, it was probably 15 years ago. I read a book, then another book, you know, it was opening my mind. Cause like I said, I worked with people who had mostly with people who had strokes. I knew I did not want to have a stroke. Now there's no like money back guarantee. If you go plant-based, you're not going to have a stroke, but the odds are in your favor that you're much less likely to. And knowing what some of those terrible illnesses looked like, I knew I didn't want to have it happen to me. So I wanted to take advantage of this plant-based eating thing. But at first I had to even wrap my head around it, even as a concept. I was a goody two shoes in elementary school. And when we learned about nutrition in elementary school, they told us we had to eat from the 4 food groups, you know, the fruit and veggies, the grains and breads,
the pyramid.
Eat those food groups. And so my teacher told me, and so that's what I did. And even in my 20s and 30s, I was like, I mean, I didn't do math for every meal, but I was conscious of, am I eating from these 4 food groups? So when somebody suggested to completely remove the meat and the dairy group, I was like, oh, that's a thing. Like, it sounded weird to me. So I had to get past even my mindset about it. And honestly, I made the transition pretty gradually. I was never a big meat eater, so I gave up meat pretty much overnight. Then eggs I gave up next. And then dairy was like, it took me a lot, like years to give up dairy. I mean, I gave up like cottage cheese pretty quick. That was not a biggie, but second to last to go for me was ice cream. And I'm sure you can guess the last thing to go for me was cheese. I live in Wisconsin, we're the cheese heads, and I love cheese. When my husband and I met each other, he would, you know, and that's more than 30 years ago now too, but he would joke with me. He's like, you hold every meal together with cheese. You have cheese on your sandwiches, cheese on our casseroles, cheese on, you know, and he wasn't wrong. Like, I loved cheese so much, more than most Wisconsinites even love cheese. So that was the hardest thing for me to give up. But I did gradually. And I mean, I wouldn't lie on your podcast. And I'm not lying when I say I don't miss cheese anymore at all. I haven't had it for 10 years or more, probably. And I don't miss it. I think my taste buds changed, my microbiome changed. So I don't crave it. I see that Pizza Hut commercial with the, you know, they peel up the big piece of cheese or the pizza and the cheese string, and it doesn't do anything for me anymore. So your taste change, your microbiome changes, like I said, but also I think one thing I've learned is I did miss creamy. I didn't miss cheese, but like, I still want creamy in my life. So I use I'll make creamy cashew sauces or put avocado on some, you know, maybe on a sandwich instead of cheese. I have the avocado there or something like that. So Yeah. So no, it was not an easy transition. And I had to deal with all the same things my clients do about like, what's my family going to think? And, oh, what are my friends going to think when I go to a restaurant and order this food? They're going to think I'm a weirdo. And oh, yeah, I dealt with all of it.
Okay. So like I warned you earlier,
we're
going to go into kind of the devil's advocacy here too, because I just know for a fact, like, you know, some people out there, when I release this episode, and mm-hmm. I mentioned the fact that there's plant-based discussions involved here, some people are just going to be like, click.
Yep.
Don't want to hear it. And there is a strong resistance to it, to the mm-hmm. idea of being plant-based out there. I know for a fact, because I was vegan, plant-based, I guess you can say, for a number of years. I don't anymore because I just decided not to be anymore.
Okay.
For personal reasons. But I want you to get out ahead of the objections and the skeptics that we both know are out there here. So
okay.
Let's answer some of the big ones here. So Michelle, where the hell is all the protein going to come from? You know, I mean, it's just like, you got to have the meats to get the protein, to get the animal proteins or to get any protein, definitely, obviously the animal proteins, but any protein. And that's just impossible on plants.
Yeah, well, you and I both know that that is not true, that you could get right. all the protein you need from plants. I mean, all plants have protein. And mm-hmm. I know we think of, maybe if you think of plants, you think, okay, the tofu has protein or the beans or that kind of thing. But all, yeah, and Popeye's spinach, right? Like we think of protein there. But all plants have protein. So yes, the tofu, yes, the beans, yes, the spinach, but also apples and grapes and even iceberg lettuce has protein. Now, obviously, iceberg lettuce can't be your only source of protein, but I bring that up because everybody thinks iceberg lettuce is like this useless throwaway vegetable. But my point is even that has protein. So
right.
when I get asked that protein question, I mean, we can get into it a little bit more than this, but I usually find the simplest way to answer that question is I don't, you know, launch into a big explanation of how and where I get my protein. I usually say, well, where do you think horses get their protein? Where do you think gorillas and elephants and all those animals get their protein? And I know a lot of your listeners can't see me, but I'll tell you, I am not as strong and fast and big as any elephant, gorilla, or horse. So I figure if they're getting all the protein they need from plants, I mean, I can get the protein from the same place. And I, like I said, I haven't had meat in probably, gosh, at least 12 years. And, you know, I mean, I'm still able to, you know, get through life. I work out and all of that, and I'm just fine. So there's actually a whole movie. If you're still doubting this, there's a movie called The Game Changers. I don't know if you've seen that, Sean, but
I have.
I'd highly, highly recommend that movie. Even if you're just like, even if this conversation just leaves any of your listeners curious, I would encourage them to check out that movie. It's called The Game Changers. It was made in 2019. It's on some of your streaming services, I'm sure. But the movie actually explores athletes, and not just like your basic run-of-the-mill, you know, weekend warrior, but like Olympic-level athletes and professional athletes who... They call the movie The Game Changers because these athletes really change their game by going on a plant-based diet. So not only are they getting all the protein they need to, I mean, we're talking about people like Venus Williams, the famous tennis star, and a man named Patrick Baumian, who's literally the strongest man in the world. He holds the world record for being the strongest man in the world. And he is a vegan. He eats only plants. And again, like if he's getting all the plants he needs and he's the strongest, or all the protein he needs from plants, I'm pretty sure, you know, me and all your listeners, you can definitely get all the protein you need from plants. But definitely check out the movie The Game Changers if you, you know, want to delve into that a little bit more.
But don't you have to, you can get all the protein you need from plants.
Right.
But doesn't that require you to eat at least twice as much to get even what the amount that you would get from just eating a sirloin steak?
I really think if you eat a diverse plant-based diet, you can get all the protein you need. The RDA for protein, I'm not going to throw a number out because I might get it wrong. So I don't want to do that on your podcast. But most people are getting all the protein they need, whether they're vegan or vegetarian, or certainly if they're meat eaters. Most people in America are getting twice the protein as the recommended daily allowance. And that the RDA then is from the government. It's not just from like some weird vegan advocacy group or something like that. So no, you really can get all the protein you need, and you don't have to do fancy math or anything. And I know people used to think you had to eat your, you know, your beans and your rice at the same meal to combine proteins. You'd believe me, if there was that much math involved, I would not eat this way. I don't really care for math that much. So if you eat, you know, the diverse diet, your body is smart enough. It takes in those plant proteins and break, just like it does with the animal proteins. It's not like you eat a steak and it just sticks it on your biceps. Like it, your body breaks it down into amino acids and then builds those amino acids back up into the proteins your body needs, whether you're getting them from animals or from plants. So, yeah, your body doesn't need to get those foods in combination. So
one other question I had, I'm going to come at you just a little bit more like this. So people like, I don't know if you've ever heard of Peter Attia. He is a longevity. He was a surgeon.
Okay.
And now he's into the longevity sphere, because he released this book several years ago. I can't think of the name of it. I have the book here and I read it, but he is a longevity expert here. And he will tell you that, you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that humans are in fact omnivorous as opposed to being herbivores or carnivores or something like that. He's like, if you just look at the structure of our teeth, there's a lot of ample evidence going back a long way, saying that humans, if nothing else, were very opportunistic eaters. Like they didn't go carnivore, but they didn't go herbivore either. They pretty much ate whatever they can get their hands on.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, like, how would you respond to that? How would you respond to that objection?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what he says, that we are opportunistic eaters. So obviously if like the only, like, and we are omnivores, we can eat plants, we can eat animals. I mean, I ate animals for the first probably almost 40 years of my life. And I'm an omnivore. I could eat meat now if I chose to. And as an opportunistic eater, if that's all that's available and you're going to starve to death or something, which was honestly the case many times for people hundreds and thousands of years ago, right? Like you got to eat what's there. But where I live, even in Milwaukee, there's so many plants to choose from. Like I don't need to eat them. And I am not Pollyanna. I do realize that there's not everybody listening to this podcast, and certainly not everybody in the world is going to be a plant-based eater. But just knowing what I know, I just think it's such a healthier way of eating, which is why I choose to eat this way. And obviously the people that I work with, they're choosing to eat this way. They just need a little help getting there. So, you know, everybody gets to make their own choices about what they put in their mouth, plants or otherwise. But, I wouldn't sit here and say, no, we're not omnivores or anything like that. I know there's vegans who would have that deeper conversation about all of that kind of stuff with you, but that's probably not me. I tend to be the warm and friendly vegan, I guess, where I'm just sort of encouraging people to eat this way, but I'm usually not looking for the controversy.
Well, sure. I mean, I think the point you made is actually a pretty good one here too, because it's just the fact that overconsumption in general, really these days in modern humans, is kind of like working against us. Because you're right, you know, we don't, for the most part, in this part of the world, we don't face death and disease and extinction on a daily basis. You know, we're not living in a jungle where we're being hunted, or where, you know, we're facing cyclical famines from weather or whatnot. And we can just pretty much eat anything we want. A lot of times we don't eat things that we should be eating either way, whether or not you're plant-based or not. But I think that's probably a very accurate thing to point out. It's like, you know, just, it's the way the today's person is not what it was, you know, 100,000 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have so many, you know, gosh, I mean, I live, like I said, in the Milwaukee area. I mean, I probably can drive to oh my gosh, probably 5 different grocery stores within about 10 minutes of where I live, at least. Like, you know, I can find all the food I need without eating the animal products. And so it works. It's very easy for me. and especially after learning how to do it, of course. So not to minimize it for somebody who's trying to do it. And it can be a hard shift, but it can easily be done. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That kind of brings me to another question here too. So we have a question about being having access to things, a vegan friendly option here. Like I said before, we both live in the Midwest, which is not a friendly territory to be plant-based.
Right.
It's just not. I mean, animal agriculture in this part of the country is enormous. It's a big part of its identity, its economy, its culture, you know. And so having any access to it, decent access to it, is really problematic. Like you said before, if I lived in San Francisco, it probably wouldn't be much of an issue. Because I could just go to any number of stores that are very convenient and indulging to a very sophisticated urbanite population. But that's not always the case.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely a little bit harder to find, you know, there are vegan restaurants, like I said, in Milwaukee. But most restaurants, I mean, I've even, you know, my family, I grew up outside of Madison, as did my husband, in some smaller communities. And even in those restaurants where we sometimes end up meeting our parents, there are foods that you can eat. Now, it might not be like, oh, the best food I've ever had in my life or anything, but you know what? I've done it. I'll get just a plain baked potato and a dinner salad. And I usually take some hummus along or something like that to put on my baked potato to make it a little creamy and more enjoyable and that kind of thing. But there are options. You just have to know how to kind of dissect a menu and look for them. And that's some of what I do with my clients and stuff as well. But, and then I have to figure like, well, I'm meeting up with my family to spend time with my family, right? Not just for the food. And so, you know, and then when I'm on my own or when it's just me and my husband, like then we'll go find a great vegan restaurant the next time or something.
So does anyone in your family ever kind of snap at you because you're just kind of like not eating very much? I mean, just having you go to a restaurant and you order a baked potato and a salad with some hummus in there, they're probably looking at you like, really? Would you even come out for?
Yeah. You know what though? Like I used to think that and I used to worry about all that stuff. And I suppose on occasion it happens, but I think for the most part, people don't really care what I'm eating. If I was like complaining about it or something, they would probably care, but I'm totally satisfied. And honestly, I've found that is I think, you know, we think everybody's watching us all the time and they're so worried about what we're going to eat and what we're going to do. And oh, if we ask the waiter an extra question and that kind of thing. But the truth is like most people, and I mean this in the nicest way to you and all of your listeners, like most people don't care about you that much. Like they care about you, but they're concerned about what are they going to order or, you know, what are they putting on their plate dishing up at the, you know, Thanksgiving buffet. They're not really watching my plate to see if I'm putting turkey on it or not, you know? Mm-hmm. And maybe that came up a little bit more at the beginning for me, but the truth is like my family has seen me make this change. And now that I'm confident in what I'm doing and how I'm eating, they just kind of let me live my life. So nobody's trying to change my mind or anything like that. I had to come out of the closet, so to speak, about this. Obviously, now that I have my own business and stuff, I know I have a lot of clients who are afraid to tell their family and that kind of thing. But honestly, like, so here's an example. At Christmas, my mother-in-law has her famous meatball recipe that we always had for Christmas. And so when I started eating a vegan diet, I was like, well, I don't want to draw a lot of attention to myself. So, you know, everybody else can dish up their meatballs with the gravy, of course, and then the mashed potatoes that had all kinds of butter and milk and that kind of thing in them. I'll let them eat all that. And I'm just going to quietly sit here and eat my, you know, green salad and green beans for dinner. And this is Christmas, remember. And I did that for a few years. And then it occurred to me, I'm like, Michelle, you are not going to encourage anybody to want to eat a plant-based diet to eat this way if they think on Christmas all you eat is green beans and salad. So I finally wised up and I started making these tofu ricotta stuffed shells, which I know if you're not a tofu eater, that might sound weird, but you can use tofu and a few other ingredients, stuffed shells, put the spaghetti sauce on the, you know, marinara sauce on top. And I'm telling you, they are so good. So I started having my stuffed shells with my green beans and my salad, which to me felt like a very, you know, holiday meal for me. And what happened was now, you know, most people probably still eat the meatballs, but they have the stuffed shell on the side, or some of my nieces and my daughter and stuff, they'll just have, you know, the plant-based options. So that kind of goes back to what we were talking about. I feel like the best way for meat that I have found is just serve beautiful and healthy and delicious. Probably that's the most important, delicious food. And that is the best way I've found for inviting people into it. So I went in a big circle there, I think, but hopefully that answers some questions there.
So I talk about the difference between plant-based and vegan. Now that sounds weird. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a difference here. And you kind of touched on it here and there. It's like vegan, you touched on it earlier. It's like beer is vegan and it's plant-based. You can call it that too.
Plants.
Right. But there's a difference between plant-based and vegan and health-based. Do you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, because I think you have to kind of make that difference clear to people here too, because you're saying, well, have a vegan breakfast. Okay, I'll have a bowl of Fruit Loops with some almond milk.
Yeah, exactly.
When there you go. When.
Yep. So, yeah. Not really a win. Yep.
And I've known people who identify as vegans who went about it in a very lazy, unhealthy way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of like, yeah, you think you're doing it right, but you're really not.
Yeah. For sure. There's definitely different approaches to eating this way. And so to kind of define some of the terms, vegan, and that tends to be the term the most people recognize. So if I am at a restaurant, I just say I'm a vegan because I don't want to like have a 20-minute conversation with the waiter or anything like that. So, but vegan, somebody who's eating a vegan diet, they're not eating any animals. So all of the things we're going to talk about now, none of them are eating any animals. So no meat, no dairy, no eggs. Somebody who's a vegan, a lot of times somebody who uses that term and you can of course use whatever term you want to define yourself, right? But a lot of times people who call themselves a vegan might be coming at it from an ethical standpoint, either for the environment or for animal rights or something like that. So it's also important to them to not wear any leather or anything, not harm animals at all.
Right.
So like we said, beer, Oreos, Diet Coke, those things are all vegan because no animals were hurt in the making of those things, but it does not make them health food.
Right.
I will say though, at least, you know, there are some things, if you're eating vegan food, even vegan junk food, you're not eating any animal hormones, and you're not, animal hormones and cholesterol are only in animal food. So I'm not an advocate for the, you know, Fruit Loops diet or anything like that, but at least you're not getting those things. So that's one good thing, I guess. Then you have the whole food plant-based crowd. If you've heard of the movies Forks Over Knives, that's a very, very healthy plant-based diet where you're only eating exactly what it says, only whole foods. So if somebody's on a whole food plant-based diet, they would eat like corn because that's a whole food, but not corn chips because that's a processed food. And then, so I, for myself, have landed on the term plant-based, because I feel like it's the most inclusive term and defines how I eat, but it's a loosey-goosey term. So some people say they're plant-based and they eat maybe 90% plants and then they eat a few animal products. I say I eat plant-based. I eat exclusively plant-based. Maybe I should say I'm an exclusively plant-based eater. I aim for the whole food plant-based because I know whole foods are the healthiest for me. But I really love some corn chips when I go out for Mexican. I'm not eating Fruit Loops or Oreos, but I do like corn chips and I do like to bake vegan cookies and stuff like that. So I'm not perfectly whole food plant-based, but I aim that direction and eat plant-based. So that tells how I eat, but hopefully that defines those different ways of looking at it as well.
So do you have to be, in your opinion, does it have to be all or nothing here? Can it can you be like, say, 80% plant-based and then have the other 20% eating meat? Or are you really just kind of shooting yourself in the foot?
I think it depends on the person. I think, I mean, of course, I'm going to advocate for a plant-based, 100% plant-based diet for everybody because of the amazing, you know, health that I've seen created in people from eating that way. Of course, you don't, it's not an all or nothing equation. And actually, okay, the all or nothing thing gets in people's way a lot when they're getting started. I like to say you can approach a plant-based diet like you approach a swimming pool. You know, some people like to tiptoe into the shallow end, some people like to cannonball into the deep end. And you can approach a plant-based diet either way. Every time you're choosing, you know, like vegetables, you're choosing broccoli, carrots, brown rice, beans, garbanzo beans, you're choosing a garbanzo bean salad over a chicken salad. Like, yes, every choice you make, I feel like, is going to take you in the right direction. On the other hand, some of the benefits that my clients experience when they go 100% plant-based, you're just not going to see those if you don't go all the way. You know, when you're talking about trying to make some really significant health changes, reversing your diabetes, bringing your inflammation in your body way down, I do think you need to go all the way. And when I say that, I don't mean you have to do it overnight. If that's uncomfortable to you, I'd rather have people tiptoe into the shallow end, but keep going until they get to the deep end, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people can. And then what I a lot of times encourage people to do is, why don't you just try it? Like, just try and go fully plant-based for a month or two. See what it feels like. I had one client who did that. She went fully plant-based a couple years ago for the season of Lent, which is right before Easter. If people don't know that, it lasts about 6 weeks. So she went fully plant-based for about 6 weeks. During that time, and she was in her mid-50s, and she had really bad knee pain when we started working together. Both her knees, she figured she was sort of heading for a double knee replacement. That wasn't even necessarily why she started seeing me. It was kind of this, she was one of my first clients this happened with, the story I'm about to tell you. So it surprised even me. But anyway, her knee pain was so bad in both her knees, she would rate it on that 10-point scale, zero being no pain, 10 being emergency room pain. She said it was like an 8 or a 9 in both of her knees. All of her walking, she tried to avoid the stairs. Then she went fully plant-based for a few weeks. And one day she found herself squatted down in the kitchen, reaching for that big soup pot in the back of her cupboard, you know, and she got down there and she said, Michelle, I was like, how did I get down here? Because my knees didn't hurt. And she was scared to stand back up. She was used to calling her kids in to help her get that soup pot out. And she kind of was squatted down there for a minute. And then she stood back up and she was like, my knees didn't hurt. And then she did like mini squats, just standing at her kitchen countertop, and the inflammation in her knees had gone down so much. Her pain went from not like a little bit to a zero, but from an 8 or a 9 to a zero. She had no knee pain at all, which then she was super excited to, you know, have experienced this in her body. And actually my mind was even blown. That has been the most surprising thing for me. And especially as a physical therapist, I can tell you, like, I'm not a bad physical therapist, but I didn't see people's pain changing that radically in just a week or two. And to see this happen with her was just mind blowing. Anyway, long story short, or long story long, at the end of Lent, her family always celebrated Easter with Polish sausage because we live in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. So she told me, you know what, Michelle, I'm going to try this Polish sausage for Easter. And I said, that's fine. So she tried it for Easter and she was fine. Her knees did not start hurting again. But then she's like, well, then the next day you have the leftovers, right? So she had the Polish sausage again the next day and her knees started hurting again. So in her example, does she have to go 100% to maintain the health benefits? Maybe not 100%. Mostly, you know, if she's eating meat 2 days in a row, she's seeing that inflammation come back in her knees and causing her that pain. And she doesn't want that. So of course, that's extreme motivation to keep eating a plant-based diet.
So part of what you do here is not only working one-on-one with clients, but you work in as an educator too, right? So you've given presentations about the benefits of plant-based eating?
Yep. I mean, I don't want to be that vegan who's like talking to everybody all the time, but when invited to share, I'm so happy to share. So yeah, I do some webinars on Zoom. I've spoken at a lot of area libraries. I think like in adult programming, that's probably been the main place I've spoken. I've spoken for like an insurance agency, like for their education for their staff. And there's an organization in Wisconsin called PB Now. I'll just give them a shout out. PB Now stands for Plant-Based Nutrition Organization of Wisconsin, and they do virtual presentations once a month. And I've had the honor of speaking for them as well, which is really cool. I just think it's cool that there's a plant-based anything of Wisconsin. So, yeah, it's out there. There's people who are interested. So, yeah.
I was going to ask you, what's the reception been like?
When I go to the libraries and stuff,
anywhere,
really good. I mean, surprisingly good. The librarians are always like, wow, that was a really good turnout. I can't say that everybody coming to my presentation, you know, the next day goes completely plant-based, but I really think even here in Wisconsin, people are interested. They're curious about learning more. They want to get that protein question answered. That kind of thing. So people, I really feel like people are learning more and it's getting out there and they're interested. So yeah, I feel like it's, people are pretty interested. I will say, I'm just gonna, you know, I don't like to brag a lot or anything, but the,
brag is what you're here for.
All right. I'm going to brag. The PB Now presentation I did is on YouTube and it now has like almost 4,000 views. So to me, that's pretty exciting that many people, and I just did it in December, so that many people have seen it. It's super exciting to me that people are learning and hearing about it.
So if people wanted to reach out to you and get in contact with you and see your stuff, where would be the best place to go?
The best place would be my website, which is wellness-empowered.org. Don't forget the dash. It's wellness-empowered.org. And I know you're going to link it up in the show notes as well, Sean. But if they go there, you know, what I do with people is I help them over the hurdles we talked about or any other hurdles. If they want to give plant-based eating a try, no matter where you're coming at, I would love to help them do that. And the best way to do that is on my website. There's a work with me page of my website. And if you go there, you can book a consult call with me and we just chat about why you want to go plant-based and I'll help you get started. But if they're, you know, if that's too much of a jump into the deep end for you, I do, I would invite you to sign up for my mailing list. Every Wednesday, I send out a newsletter about eating plant-based and I tackle some of the hurdles in there or tell stories about my clients, that kind of thing. So love to invite all your listeners to sign up for my mailing list as well.
Well, Michelle, here comes the question that you knew was going to come towards the end here. So at we always have this tradition of closing out at the end of the podcast here with one thing to leave the audience to remember as we start to sign off here, and one thing only. What would you say it would be?
First of all, I think that's such a great question. And I've been so glad to be here and talking with you today, Sean, and talking to your listeners. And
thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I recently heard this statement, and I just think it is so true. Doubt can only be removed by action. So if you're somebody who you're like, I don't know, that story about that lady's knee pain, or, you know, oh, could your cholesterol really come down that much? Or, oh, would I even really like tofu? Like, all of those things are doubts, but you're never going to know if you don't try. So that would be my invitation for everybody. Remove that doubt. Just give it a try. Like I said, just try eating plant-based for a month, for even 3 months. I've seen such amazing people happen for people in 3 months. Somebody's cholesterol went down 70 points. Blood pressure normalizes. Acid reflux goes away. Joint pain, like we talked about, goes away. Weight loss. But you'll never know if you don't give it a try. And if you think you can't, you can. Like, you really, really can do it. You should totally give it a try. And you don't have to try it all at once. That 1 month, you can work up to it. Just take one step at a time. Tiptoe into the shallow end. But yeah, please give it a try, because there's so many incredible health benefits. And if I can do anything to help you as you make the change, please reach out. Because as much as I loved helping people as a PT, I love helping people with this. This is exactly what I love to do. So Thanks.
And you literally have nothing. You're literally at risk of nothing by trying out this stuff. You're in no danger of anything. You're not gonna lose your house. You're not gonna lose your job, your money, or anything like that. You just like.
Yeah.
There's no downside.
There aren't. And if you think about it, like anytime somebody is trying to, you know, go at a health problem with a medication, and I'm not like anti-medication either. I think, you know, we need a lot of the medications we use in this world, but you've seen the commercials on TV. Every medication comes with a, you know, 30 to 60 second list of that they have to read off of all the side effects. But the truth of a plant, there's no side effects. There are no side effects from eating too much broccoli. Like, and if there are, they're only healthy ones. Like if you're lowering your cholesterol and decreasing the inflammation in your body and bringing down your A1C at the same time, like great. Those are great side effects. But there's no negative side effects to eating too many plants. So you're right. Give it a try.
Well, Michelle, I appreciate the time you've given to me and give it to everyone who has been listening. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. It's always happy to talk about plants. I love this. So thanks for having Thanks for your podcast too, Sean, and all the work that you do.
No, not a problem. And thanks for your kind words. So everyone listening, of course, you know, like I said, like she said, I'll put everything in. If you're listening along enough, you know that the contact information will be made available in the show notes. But until next time, thanks so much to everyone who has listened, everyone who will listen. I would ask that to you out there, hang on for just a little bit longer. There's a 1-minute message at the end of the program, strictly just to you. Appreciate you all. Until next time, train hard. Peace out. Hey, thanks so much for joining us. I hope you walk away with something useful from the episode. Don't forget that you can subscribe to my publishing platform called Samo Libs. It's the same platform I upload all my episodes, and I write my articles and my blogs and wherever else comes to mind I think is worth sharing with the world. The link is featured at the bottom of the show notes of every episode. By subscribing, you are becoming one of the very first that gets alerted whenever a new episode or a new blog or a new contribution piece becomes available on the platform. You can also follow the show, Fitness Reborn with Sean, by clicking the follow button on either Apple or Spotify or whatever your preferred streaming platform happens to be. I want you to know that your listenership, your viewership, and your continued support and your well-being mean the very world to me. Thank you so much. I hope to see you next time. Take care.